we're very pleased to be joined by Scott Morrison. Hey, Scott, I've seen the trailer for this. Matt Barnaby and I were just talking off the air. I remember seeing Scott Stevens at Eric Lindros. I remember watching that game on TV. The Korea I didn't see in real time. Korea, I've seen subsequent to that. But when look, I'm going to ask Matt this as well. I'm going to ask you this because you've covered more hockey than just about anybody I know. What did you think when you saw that hit? And Scott, when you see it again, does anything change? You know what I mean? Like when I see those hits over and over again, it's like every time I see it, I get more and more scared.
Yeah, no question about it. Thinking back to when it happened, and that's a while ago, obviously, but I think the first reaction was you were just amazed that he was able to get up. I think everybody thought, especially because he was out of it for so long, that there was going to be a stretcher involved. And then to see him come back, I think at the time we were, I don't know if naive is the right word, Jeff, but we weren't as knowledgeable about concussions and everything as we are now. And we were shocked that he came back, but we admired him for coming back and applauded him for coming back. And then to do what he did was an absolutely amazing feat under those circumstances. And to find out now that, looking back, he had no awareness of anything that had happened. He can't remember, without going back and looking at video, Game 7 either. So when you look at it now and you see the devastation of that hit, it's remarkable that he's able to come back. And you hope, under the circumstances, if it ever, God forbid, happened again, that a player wouldn't be allowed to come back. And I think there's enough protocol in place now that wouldn't happen.
Yeah, you talk about knowledge, and knowledge is power. And when you look at that hit, we back then we're like, wow, what a warrior. Like this guy is a beast, comes back, he doesn't remember anything. He has no clue or recollection in watching and listening to him over the years. Is there anything that surprised you about doing the feature? I played with Paul. He's one of the nicest guys you could ever meet. He was him and Solani together when they were in Anaheim, one of the most dynamic duos I ever saw in my career. And I can't remember who said it in your feature, but you knew where they were on the ice at all times, because anytime they stepped on the ice, the potential for the puck to be in, you'd be a minus one, was very, very good. Is there anything that surprised you on the feature that you did?
Well, in terms of those two, you couldn't have two different guys in any ways, but they're best friends.
Yeah.
And they just automatically clicked on the ice, and that just speaks to that innate ability that great players have to read off each other, to know the right place to go, and the other player knows the right place to put the puck. And they were just magical the minute they started. And it was a trade that Paul admitted inside the dressing room. They hated to lose the guys they did because they're your friends, but behind closed doors, they were all looking at each other with big smiles on their faces. Mm-hmm. They were grieving on the outside and smiling on the inside, knowing what they were getting in Timo. But I think what was very interesting about Paul is he's been out of the limelight, been out of any kind of light really for the last 7 years since he left the game, was just to kind of see where he is now. And there was a lot of anger when he left, understandably, because he didn't leave on his terms and it was premature and he felt like he had a lot to give. And I think when he looked back, he also felt that because of what he calls illegal hits, any concussion he had, he says, was part of in his estimation, an illegal hit, that he might have peaked really as a 23-year-old. He kept playing, but he never really got to the peak of his career. And I think that really made him angry and disappointed, and a lot of different emotions about the game being shut down, not on his terms. And I think the good thing is that even though he wasn't visible, he wasn't as detached from the game as a lot of people thought, and wasn't necessarily totally angry at the game. And he still has and had a lot of friends who were involved, stayed in touch with ex-teammates, a lot of guys that came through towns with teams, either as coaches or still players. He'd get together with them, and he paid pretty close attention to what was going on. So, and now I think he's in a better place. He's got his health back. He had major, major neurological damage from those six concussions. I mean, he was at sort of half capacity at one time, and So he's got his health back, and he's in a good place, and he's enjoying life. And it's nice to see, and you mentioned it, Matthew, this is a good guy with a great personality.
He
And people are going to get to see that again, and that's a wonderful thing.
Matt made the point, when we talked about Scott Stevens. He made the point that Scott Stevens and Eric Lindros were the two guys that when he played, you kind of knew where they were in the ice. You checked.
You look down time. The other side of the bench to say, are they coming out there when I'm out there? Because I don't want to be surprised. Because I'm going to wake up in a hospital.
But I got to ask you this. Does Paul bear a deep grudge against Scott Stevens because of that hit?
He just said that, you know, the comments that he made were he felt it was late and he felt it was dirty.
Mm-hmm.
And they never had a conversation, and I don't think he felt he needed to have a conversation. It'd be interesting to see what's going to happen this weekend, because the two of them are going to be on the ice on Sunday afternoon at Air Canada in that Hall of Fame alumni game. So they're going to see each other this weekend, and I think there's going to be a conversation. So I don't think he holds a grudge against them. I think it was the collective of what happened in his career that made Paul angry. Not necessarily an individual.
Yeah, I don't think you could be angry. I know we look at that hit, but it's the generation we played in. We talked about this before we even came on the air about this. Everything was late. Mike Pekka, pound for pound, was the heaviest hitter in the league that I've ever seen. But half of his hits were 10 seconds late. So you had to know where guys were, and I wouldn't begrudge Scott Stevens for it. It's just the league and generation that we played in.
Was it that noticeable? I'll ask both you guys, just because you watch more hockey than me. Is it that noticeable to you as well, Scott, that the hits were later then?
Well, certainly that kind of hit was applauded. There's no question about it.
True.
I don't think the blatantly late hits were applauded, but there was a gap there that was probably tightened or has been tightened up.
You're allowed to finish your check, right? You're allowed to finish your check.
We used to call it 1/1000, 2/1000, then you have to stop. Now it's microseconds. Now, like 0.2 of a second late, and you're done.
You can't even say 1,000.
Yeah, no. Yeah. We were up to 1/1000, 2/1000s. Now you can't hit them. That's a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was a lot of problem. Wendell Clark, a lot of the hits that we applauded Wendell for wouldn't be tolerated now. So yeah, it was a sign of the times, really. It was, and I'm sure everybody on the New Jersey bench felt great about the hit.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, that's a long time ago, 14 years, and a lot has changed.
Matt, when did it change for you when you were delivering hits? Was there a time in your career towards the end where you realized the 1/1000, 2/1000 was not?
Yeah, I was never a big open ice hitter.
Right,
I was more along the board, so you have a little bit more leeway that way, because the guys finishing into the boards, it's forceful, but you really don't hurt a lot of guys that way unless you're Eric Lindros size, you know, coming in as a steamroller. So I didn't really have to change the way that I played, essentially. The more is what things you could do, and you know, embellishment of a call. That was more that I tried to really be cognizant of how I played in that way, because I wasn't getting the calls anymore, and that was totally different.
Right. And Scott, I would think too, you know, when I look at Paul Kariya, and I wonder, and again, maybe he has an answer for this. If you plopped Paul Kariya down now as a 19-year-old or an 18-year-old, draft eligible, whatever, and he got drafted, does he ever sit there and think, man, if I played in this era, given the way the game is now, I mean, you know, I could be challenging Gretzky's records the way that, well, I don't know if he could do that the way the game is played now, but you know what I mean. You're going to, he would have been a dominant player right now.
Well,
even more dominant.
Yeah, I mean, he was back in the day. I mean, he was in the same sentence as the very, very best players, and he was in the top five, top seven of scoring.
But I guess he'd feel
years.
A little more protected now, maybe because of the rules?
Oh, definitely. Protected from any kind of hits like that, sure. Less obstruction. Matthew, you can speak to it, but there's far less hitting in the game, period, than there was back then. So there'd be, on one side, there would be, on the physical side, a lot more protection. On the flip side, it's still pretty crowded on that ice, and his kind of speed would be marvelous in this game, but it's still pretty clogged out there, and we see a lot of fast guys, and it's you have to work hard to get those points. So, but he would be one of the best players, no question. And most often when you see it, you know it, Jeff, from other sports, baseball, any kind of sport, the great players could play in any era because they figure out how to do it, right? They just have that skill set.
His release on the power play, and as many power plays as there are now, and without the obstruction, I mean, guys would just hold on to his arms and legs, and he'd be trucking through in tight turns. And like you said, the chemistry that they had, and having played with them later on in Colorado, I've never seen a guy with, we talked about Mark Messier the other day with the passing of Doc Holliday. Then another guy in the same breath is Paul Kariya. The laser focus he had, it was almost creepy. You didn't go near him really on game days
because
he was a little quirky and he was doing these stretches. Wow. And everything was laser focused about being the best that night. Did that come out in talking with him, or was he a little bit more fun loving?
No. Well, no, he talked about it, and we talked to Rob Blake and Scott Niedermeyer and Timo about it, and they all just said it. They'd never seen a player in their career with his kind of focus, dedication, and commitment, and the things he would do beyond the ice after practice, forever practicing a certain shot, and then the next game he'd go in, and the one Blake talks about is roofing a backhand from the side of the crease, and then next game he goes out, and that's how he scores the goal. Mm-hmm. And it was just like he was driven to be perfect and to be the best he could be, and the guys would sit there, and you'd watch him on a game day, and you just give him his space. He had a routine, and he followed that routine. He said the night before games, they go out for dinner, and he'd chew his food a certain number of times. He'd heard about an Olympic athlete who chewed his food 39 times or something.
Wow.
He would try that to see if that could give him an edge, and it was just everything.
Go ahead, sorry.
They did say when it got to the off days, then they tried to drive him crazy by getting him out of his routine.
The only guy that I was seeing, when I went to Colorado, and it was such a veteran-laden team, the Tony Granato coached, but he let the guys have personalities and really run the room. We had the Rob Blakes and Timo Solanis, Joe Sakic. Yeah. Obviously, we had a plethora of Hall of Famers on that team, but just a great bunch. You would see Paul Kariya on game days, and you'd literally like stay away, and he'd be doing these weird stretches and almost humming to himself. And it was weird, but he was so great, and you didn't want to, obviously, me as a newbie coming there, I kind of stayed away from it, and I'm kind of a prankster in the room and like to have fun. On off days, he'd get on the plane, and Adam Foote was like the main guy that would mess with him. He'd hold him down on the plane and tickle him, and Paul would be crying and laughing like a little girl on the thing, and he'd go over and touch his sticks in a certain way or knock them over, and Paulie would go wild, and Adam Foote was the only one that could get away with it, but it was pretty funny on off days.
Scotty, we're really looking forward to this. Thanks so much for joining us today. It sounds like a great feature.
Okay, guys, take care. Thanks very much.